the Doctor.
It's Clobberton.
Engage.
Shazam!
Welcome, everybody, to Heroes Asylum, issue 62. The sexy 60s. Is that what we're going to call it? I think that's what they call it.
I like that. The sexy 60s.
We'll be in the sexy 60s for a little bit longer. Guys, it is Mike Kane once again for Heroes Asylum. This is quarantine issue number two. If you guys want to keep track and timestamp where we're at. But we're here to make sure you guys enjoy your time. Take your mind off of the craziness. Take your mind off of being home, staring at those four strange looking walls and that weird person sitting at the end of your couch wondering who the hell that is.
Yeah, I ask myself that question all the time.
That's a mirror. That's a mirror. I learned that today. That is a mirror for me.
Oh, boy.
All right. So what we're going to do, guys, we're going to do something a little different here this weekend. We are leading up to WrestleMania. And if anybody knows about WrestleMania and wrestling right now, just like everything else is kind of shutting down and closing up. And wrestling, especially WWE wrestling, has had to go through some things because just recently here in Florida, where their training center is located at, that's where they were going to do the wrestling. That's where they've done a lot of their training or a lot of their Raws and SmackDowns in the recent weeks. Here in Florida has now just basically done a complete shutdown that nobody can get together in large groups. So they're doing stuff, I think, up in Connecticut, in the mean streets of Greenwich. So,
hey man, Mean Street Posse.
So what they're doing is they're spreading it out. We don't know what the card is anymore, really, because some people are saying they're not going to show, some aren't. So normally at this point, we were originally planning to have a guest come in and do a watch along or kind of like a pregame the WrestleMania, but we don't know what the hell is going on. So
there's the news out there is so oddball. Like you hear like one thing 1 minute, the next minute it's another thing. It's just, it's insane. Like literally it's insane. So
it's like the news for everything. I mean, especially when it comes down to the health stuff, but then you throw into the entertainment world factor. There's just like, nobody knows what the heck's going on half the time. You hear some people saying this, other people saying this. So, but what we're going to do is we're going to cover some news like we always do. But then we're going to jump into covering some work. What I've called this is the Mount Rushmore. We're going to start doing shows like this where we're covering what we think would be the Mount Rushmore of blank, whatever the subject is. We're going to choose that week. And this week, it's going to be, who do we think is the Mount Rushmore of WWE or / WWF, depending on how old you are. We'll jump into the other wrestling companies later on, but I didn't want to do an overall wrestling because I think that's huge and very large, and I don't think it's fair to do a Mount Rushmore. But I think Mount Rushmore's of companies is a good route to go.
Yeah, it's a solid good enough route to do it.
So we're gonna go ahead and jump into first our new segment that is the admissions ward. Then do that, and then we're gonna jump into covering what we feel are our top four with maybe some runner ups. But let's go ahead and get going on this.
News from the admissions ward.
So, Kane, what do you have for your news this week?
Well, Netflix announced that Castlevania Season 4 is coming. Netflix has renewed the popular animated series. If you guys haven't seen it yet, it started in 2018. It started with basically only 5 episodes, but the popularity got so big, they extended it over 10, Season 2. And then they just recently finished Season 3, and with the upcoming Season 4 coming out next year. And I don't know if you've seen Season 3 yet. I thought out of the 3 seasons that it's been out. And this is spoilers if you haven't watched Season 2, there's no Dracula Season 3 at all. Yeah, there's a couple hints.
Don't spoil it. I was one of those ones. I love Season 1. I couldn't get it caught up on the rest of it, but I want to. That's with my little downtime, I think I'm gonna have here.
It's really good. It got better. Like it's one of those things when they started off, like we don't know what we have here. So I think it was literally 3 or 5 episodes, and then it was over. I'm like, that's it. And then there was a big demand for it. And then Season 2 went to 10, and then Season 3 I think was 10 or 11, and now they're doing Season 4. Good move on their part. It's been a good little series. If you ever play the games, you don't have to play the games. It's like a hybrid of the games and like some of the books. But it's really well done. It's just really, and it's really dark. Really dark. Like if you put your eyes over it, you couldn't really tell if it's an animated or a live action. They make everything so good. The animation's really good. And the voice acting is really top tier too. There's a couple guys in there that you might recognize if you hear some of the voices. Really top tier actors. But I think it's well done. And of course, Netflix, when they smell money, They're going to keep going it out. They're going to keep that assembly line going. So season four probably is going to drop sometime next year, probably around the same time it dropped this year, which was about February. So look forward to that.
Awesome. Yeah, I've been one of those ones I was looking. I wanted to continue. There's been a couple of really good anime ones or anime style. I don't want to call them anime for anybody to get upset because Netflix doesn't really do true anime, but anime styling. Netflix, there's one, I think the dragon, the son of the dragon or something along that lines. It's like almost has a very similar, Avatar feel, Last Airbender feel to it.
I haven't seen that one yet.
It's pretty cool.
In my queue though.
Yeah. First season was really good. I haven't gotten a chance to catch up on the other seasons, but they do have, like I said, some good styling of anime. And like I said, I don't want to call it anime cause I don't want to get lynched.
Yeah, you don't want
to get lynched on the throne of Akira, God forbid.
Oh, boy, you know, ride down in the ghost in the shell. So.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So mine actually comes from our lovely Disney Plus. If you guys could just... There's some news coming from the Mandalorian side. Dave Filoni has recently updated his Twitter banner. And a lot, we did have the news a little bit about the, you know, Ahsoka possibly being Rosario Dawson. That still hasn't come from a reliable source yet. Until it comes from StarWars.com, it's still kind of a news to us. But Dave Filoni did post a new banner on his Twitter site that has Ahsoka riding a wolf, like a horse-looking thing. But behind her is a very familiar face with a gray beard and bald head of one Captain Rex. So the rumor is that maybe with her return is Captain Rex coming around. We do know he was around during the Return of the Jedi. He was at the Battle of Endor. So we do know that he is still around and hopefully apparently has survived. So the rumor mill is starting to kick around. And we do know that actor Michael Peña, I believe that's how you pronounce his name, is been rumored to be in working with the Mandalorian, and he would be a bounty hunter type. So their news, would he become Captain Rex, or are we going to look at a different character for Captain Rex? What do you think?
I think we're going to get Rex. I think that's obvious. It'd be interesting. Like, how old is Rex at this time? Because he's been around for a while now. He's got to be in his late 60s.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, at least that, because you figure how old was Vader for Return?
I think Vader, early 50s.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess early 50s for Vader.
So, I mean, there's a good chance of him still being around. I mean, he is a tough SOB.
Yeah, that picture by Filoni putting up on Twitter was brilliant. I'm like, wow. I mean, you knew this was going to happen. You know,
but always that's Filoni though. Filoni tricks you though. If you really follow Filoni, he'll put out a drawing of something and nothing ever comes of it.
Yeah, this is a little bit different, though. It's just he's working with live action, and I think, you know, he's got that first season under the belt. Everybody loved it, and now I think he's going to go into his toy box. He's like, ooh. Well,
again, this isn't Filoni's project. This is
Kevin. I know. I'm so, just saying, I mean, but he
you
can,
got, you got, he's
they're got not going to say no to him, though.
No, they probably won't. I just, I think a lot of times he's also, doing little teases just to see the fan reaction. You know, I mean, we got to remember Star Wars is known for how many times have we heard that so-and-so is going to be doing a movie about the bounty hunters or so-and-so is going to be doing a movie about Obi-Wan and that just all flops. How many times have we heard about them redoing any of the games? I mean, there's been, we're going to release a new game next year. Nothing. We've been hearing about that for 5 years. So unfortunately I'm taking the route of suspicion with this because I just, until I see it, I mean, I'd love to see it. I think it'd be cool. But again, my conversation with you before about Rosario Dawson possibly doing Ahsoka, it's one of those things. Just they have to tread lightly with what they do.
Yeah, I guess it's one of those things. You're waiting. Excuse me. I'll tickle my throat. But it's one of those things you got to wait and see. It's going to happen. I would like it to happen. It would make sense to happen. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see. But, you know, Dave, he's a little tricky bastard.
Yeah, like I said, he'll post stuff about a picture of this and that and nothing. We won't get a word about it. And he loves his Twitter. He'll ghost on Twitter for a while and then pop up with something strange and then ghost again. It's like, what are you doing? So what do you have next on your news?
Well, guess what? Netflix has announced, or actually Ryan Reynolds is circling a live action adaptation of the video game Dragon's Lair. coming to Netflix. When I first heard this, first I thought, perfect. Ryan being the idiotic little knight. If you ever played that game, that was one of the first 3D games you saw when you were went to the arcade. You really couldn't control it. It was more about like, where are you going to guide this character here? I never get past the first board. I always died because I didn't know what I was doing. But, you know, and I think they had a series that was on CBS, Saturday Morning Cartoons, if you remember that.
Yep.
So that was on for, I think, a season or two. Okay. I mean, with Ryan Reynolds in there, you know there's going to be a touch of his humor. So, you know, they're going to bring all that stuff back. My question is, are you going to bring Pole Position too? You know, are you going to bring Dungeons and Dragons? Is that coming out as well? You know, yeah. Turbo Teen. I'm just waiting for those series to get
next. I'm going to play the pessimist on this one as well. I think this is just a talk. I don't think this is like, I saw that news article too. And I was looking at the kind of the source material and so, and where it was coming from. And I was kind of questioning that, but I mean, it would be fun. I completely agree with you that needs to have, you know, that if anybody's going to do it, it should be him. And you know, we are in the age of, you know, us in our age group, or, you know, doing Renaissance. I mean, we are the ones that really are dropping the money in there.
Yeah. So why not do it? I mean, if it's going to be on Netflix, I don't think it's going to be a movie, maybe like a short 5-episode series thing. I don't know if they want to, I don't know if there's that much lore behind Dragon's Lair, but you know, I could be wrong.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure myself. So, my next,
it'll be interesting to see if they do it.
My next one, and I thought this was interesting. I know you haven't read it yet, but have you gotten a chance to read the Batman and Superman number 8 yet?
No, I just picked it up. Picked it up.
I'm not going to do a spoil, but there is a moment that I thought you and me would love, a very cool moment, that one of Batman villains steals one of Superman villains' greatest quotes.
And oh, really?
Yes, there's a moment where the demon head, Ra's, is standing before Zod and proclaims, "Kneel before Ra's al Ghul."
Wow.
So I found that.
Now I have to read.
Yeah, this. For anybody out there that I've been slow to pick this book up, but when this little news clip popped up and I saw the few of the panels, I was like, that is just, that's perfect. When he turns to Zod and you know, proclaims for him to kneel before him. I think that is awesome. And something to definitely look forward to, guys, because it is going to be a while before we get some real hard comic books coming out, unfortunately. Grab these things. This is a series of 8. I think this was the last book on this. So Kane's always raved about this one. I'm going to be picking them up, but just to give you a taste of what's to come, and for the finale one, there is that moment. It's not giving away any spoilers of where the story went, but that just moment, because there's a few things that happen after the next two panels that things like changed on what you think is going to happen. But just that one little panel looks just amazing.
Yeah, it looks decent. Like I said, it's literally like when I went to Acme today. Like I went there and I got my stack and ran out. Had a little mask on, and that was one of the first ones.
Well, was that because of the virus, or were you just like always wearing your mask again? Kind of.
I always wear a mask. You know that?
Yeah.
I always wear a mask. Didn't catch anything.
So that one I thought would be a fun little news blip there, and something to add.
Well, I've raved about the series enough, so now if you're going to be on board, then
just that panel alone just hooks me a little. I was like, man, I got to see what leads up to that moment.
Yeah, like I said, it's been a really good series. I think it got off to a little bit of a slow start, but you know, after issue 3, I think it kind of picked up steam a little bit. And now we're getting some good stuff. And when they introed Zod and Ra's, I was like, oh, where are they going here? Because you were thinking they were going to fight the infected, and they don't even mention Luther or, you know, the Batman who lasts. Like I think they do in just passing, but it's almost like they're doing something else while the bigger story's going on. So excuse me.
All right. And do you have anything else, sir?
No, I just had those two for the week.
All right. And my last one is a new star will be born soon. DC's Stargirl from going on to DC's Universe, the streaming service, is being pushed. It is pushing back its premiere, not because of so much of the pandemic, but it wants to come out about just shy of its primetime debut also on CW. Because so this show is running in tandem with DC Universe and also the CW, and basically bringing like that golden age of a hero to life. Which, if you look at the golden, you know, the other characters that are going to be along with her in that, they're definitely jumping into the golden age.
Now, does it say what timeline that series is taking place in? Is it like in the DC or is it in the CW universe, or is it like, well, somewhere else?
No, because it's outside. If you remember the crossover.
Oh, okay.
They were part of one of the other worlds, so they're not Arrowverse. They're in their own universe, and they're covering. You're getting, you know, Stripe, Stargirl, Dr. Midnight, Wildcat. So you're getting more of the old golden age superheroes.
I wonder if Alan Scott's going to show up.
Tigress, Wildcat, Sportmaster, Dragon King, Hourman. I mean, you're looking at Justice Society of America, really, is what you're going to be looking
but
at.
But no Alan Scott. That's strange.
Nothing. Well, again, this is recurring characters, not to have him. They don't want to make him too big, and because he'd be a big factor. Like that's right. A major factor.
Yeah, that's true, I guess. But
you know, this is about her, not them. But it shows, like, you know, I can't wait to see Wildcat, and Tigress. I mean, there's some of these older ones are really great. Hourman, to see him in there. Dr. Midnight also.
Dr. Midnight and Hourman, those are the two guys I'm looking forward to. Those are fun characters, especially Dr. Midnight. I think they showed him in an episode of Legends. I think it was season 2. They showed the Justice Society.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, we've seen Justice Society before, but not so much. And this is not Justice Society specific. This is next generation Justice Society. So we're going to see the old ones. We are going to see, you know, Rex Tyler, Ted Grant, those guys from the original. But what we're going to see now is their generation.
Any casting on who's playing, like, Wildcat? Yes. And all those?
Well, for Wildcat of the old or the new?
Old.
Old. Yeah. They had for Wildcat, that is Brian Staff.
Yeah. You know, for some reason, I thought of Ron Perlman being an old Wildcat.
But again, you don't want, this is a TV show, and you don't want actors overpowering the leads. That's where they're not going to do. Yeah, movie-wise, yeah. And if it was about him and him only, sure, definitely see that. But this is about the new generation. Very, very heavy female base. So anybody that's got some issues with the female empowerment going on in the superhero world right now, you're going to have some issues. Because, I mean, you have, you know, obviously Stargirl, who's not Starman. You have Stripe, who's Pat Dungan. He's basically an Iron Man-esque type character in a big, massive suit. If you guys have seen any of the DC opening of any of their movies or TV shows, you see him in the lineup with the rest of the superheroes. He's usually, I think he's about middle. Dr. Midnight, you have Beth Chapin. You Wildcat, you're going to have Yolanda Montez. So a lot more female characters, which is completely fine, because that was the second generation. I still would love to see them attempt to do a Justice Society with the old characters, but, you know, we're not going to get that.
I'm sure you'll get flashbacks.
You are. That's why you have the reoccurring characters of the old characters. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They're there. That's what I'm saying. There's two Wildcats in here. There's two Dr. Midnights. They're there. They're just, you're gonna have the old and you're in the new.
Only one Hourman, that's it.
Probably. Okay. and that's just like the first season. I'm sure they're gonna delve in. They're probably gonna mention Alan Scott. I'm sure there's gonna be a lot of deep cuts coming to this, because I mean, if basing a movie off of old Justice Society characters, and Justice Society is still very unknown to a lot of you got to be a big sweaty for the Justice Society to be excited about that.
I wonder if they'll intro the Metal Men. That'd be kind of cool. Yeah, that'd be kind of that will kind of fit that series, like maybe a season 2. Like, hey,
who you do have to? you have Jeff Johns writing the first episode. He's the creator for it, so you gotta somebody behind it with the knowledge, and probably
he's,
the,
he's, he's sweaty, so.
Yeah, so we'll see. But yeah, that is going to be May 18th that they're finally going to debut that. And again, that's just a few days before they debut it on the CW. And again, I just think that's kind of a cool idea, running them in tandem. So that way, if you don't, not a big fan of the DC universe, and you actually see that, like, oh, they run that on there too. Well, what else do they run? And you can kind of, you know, take a look at that.
Go down the rabbit hole. Yeah, a lot of good stuff out there.
Yes, yes. So, all right. That is the end of the admissions ward. All right, guys. So we're going to jump into our wrestling segment. We're going to jump in. Like I said, this is going to be the what did I call it? The Mount Rushmore. Yeah, the Mount Rushmore of wrestlers from WWE. And basically, we're going to look at the beginning of their careers, cover their whole careers as to why we feel that they deserve a right to have their, you know, be recognized as such. Let's see here. I think Kane, you were going to go first.
Yes, sir. And my first choice is Bret the Hitman. I love that theme music. Just rocks. That was, I think he had that song when he was in. Was he have that in Hot Foundation?
Yep, it was both.
Was that their tag team?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, okay, I'm just trying to remember. I was like, was that the same thing the Hart Foundation used? Not sure. Anyway, Bret Hart's my first one. He's always been one of my faves. Even when he was with the Hart Foundation with the late, great Jim the Anvil Neidhart, I always thought in his tag team, he always kind of just stood out to me. And I always kept thinking, like, he had the look. He wasn't the biggest guy in the world, but technically he was just so sound. And watching a match, you know, our friend, you know, Grant Gimmick, who's in the deepest penitentiary of the asylum right now. We can't find him, which is sad. He is a big Bret Hart mark. And I'm not as big as he is, but like when you watch a match with Bret Hart, especially I think the WrestleMania match with Shawn Michaels, I think that's one of my favorite. He had another match. I'm trying to think. He had a match with Davey Boy Smith, and it was for the Intercontinental Championship. And I believe that was SummerSlam. That's another great match. If you want to see what this guy can do. He had a WrestleMania match with Yokozuna. Wasn't the best in the world. Some stuff happened afterwards, which was not the greatest. But technically sound, like, character-wise, he wasn't the best on promos. I thought he was always okay. Sometimes he can get, like, a little bit of an idiocy vibe to me when he's promos. He always got, like, you know, always stuttered. But in the ring, man, there's few guys who could do what he did in that ring.
Well, not only that, but you look at his constant feuds with him and Shawn Michaels. Most of those are pure gold. I don't even want to touch on the moment, you know, he left the Montreal Screwjob, but just his overall time with them. That feud was actually outside of the ring as well. They did not like each other, but that tension between them, you know, showed up in their actual matches. I thought was great.
Yeah, it was just straight intensity. They did not like each other for the longest time. You're definitely right. I mean, I think there was a documentary on that Montreal Screwjob and backstage and him talking to Vince and Shawn basically saying, you know, I didn't know what happened, and just a whole thing. That was a big drama thing for a couple of years. WCW didn't do that much over there, sadly, because, you know, got hurt, Goldberg and all that stuff. But
I mean, you also think of not only just what he could do, but who he could put over. If you think back to the history of him and people he has made, if he's made anybody, he has made Stone Cold Steve Austin. Austin had his time. Austin dropped the 316, you know, just said, I just whooped your ass. His characteristics were coming out then, but it was the match of him and Austin where Austin bled out and passed out. So it showed that Bret could do his job, but it showed Austin as a badass. I'm not going to tap out. I'm going to pass out.
That was one of those instances that both guys went over that night too, because Bret won, but Stone Cold never quit, and he just passed, and everybody's, oh my God, this guy, you can't beat him. Like, he passed out in the sharpshooter, but he never quit.
Yep. And it was one of those moments that very rarely can happen, that two wrestlers walk in, one walks in a heel and the other one walks in a babyface, and by the end, their roles have flipped, and now Austin is walking out the babyface and Hart walked out the heel. It was so weird.
Yeah, it was. That's the first thing I remember of that match, because, like you said, he was getting cheered coming to the ring. It's Bret Hart. He's always been the face. And then Stone Cold, he's the arrogant guy. Like, we don't like this guy, but it's something organically, like we've always talked about, when it happens organically, it's so good. And then he walked out of there, and all of a sudden they're making T-shirts. You know, Austin 316 is a big thing. And I mean, everybody talks about the King of the Ring thing. Yeah, that's where it was born. But I think this match, you know, you talk about a match that 316 was born. This was it. That yeah. definitely was it.
And if you hear the stories that after they got done, but they went to the back, because this is about the time McMahon was trying to stop with the color and no bleeding. And they did this without approval. And they went to the back and they both got their asses chewed. And Brett stood up and says, no, that was my call. That's not on Austin. That was me. And that, again, shows you what kind of person he was behind the stage. Hey, I know what's going to get us over. I know what's going to make us look the best. I'll take the heat for it. And that's what he did. And I think, you know, one of those moments that a lot of people don't like Brett because of his onstage persona. But when you really looked at what he was there for, he was there to get that guy over and that guy to get him over. And he took the heat for a great moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did. But it worked. Sometimes when you call those audibles, they work out. And then Vince looks like a genius when he's not. So that's Brett. I guess we go to you, sir.
Yes, sir. My next one, or my first one, actually, will be Mr. Jake the Snake Roberts.
That's why I didn't get it. Like, I was, because I totally forgot that Jake had a theme song. Because for a while, he never had a theme song.
Yeah, because most people, because he just came out. It was just Jake. You know, he came out. Orlane or Jake Smith Jr., born 1955. Jake the Snake Roberts. There's not enough words that can be spoken about Jake. Jake, he's a second generation wrestler. I understand a lot of bad blood between him and his father. He had a couple of stints within WWE. First was 1986, then 1992. And then he had some runs with, you know, the NWA, the WCW. In a couple other, you know, alliances and groups, best known for, unfortunately, Beyond the Mat, and then of course the DDP, I can't remember the name of it now off the top of my head.
What, the snake?
Yeah, no, the DDP movie that would have him.
Oh, is that Beyond the Shadows? I think it's called.
No, the Boxing Shadows is the Bret Hart one. That's I think it was the
Wrestling and Shadows?
Rebuilding of Jake the Snake or whatever it was. The one I told you to bring a tissue for.
That was a hard.
Yeah, he's gone. He's battled some demons. I mean, if anybody wants to know, it's not a hidden secret. There are many documentaries and many YouTube channels, devoting their time about his fall. But he also came around and rose up and became better. But it's about his performance. Jake, in a time of flamboyance, over the top, cartoonish wrestling, Jake was the man that whispered. When he talked, when he did a promo, it wasn't, I'm coming to get you. No, it was, you're gonna listen to me, and I'm good. And his approach to doing his promos were amazing. I couldn't tell you how many interviews I've seen where people are like,
I could tell you about one promo. I'm not even talking about the older ones. I'm talking about a recent promo. Because he's in AWA right now, and he can't wrestle anymore, as we know. He's a little older, but he did a promo to Cody Rhodes, and then I think he's part of his stable that he's building. And just the intensity, he still has that low voice. And basically, the promo starts out with him, and he's basically by a campfire by himself, and you hear this ominous music in the background. He's like, Cody, you know, all I want to do is talk. You pick the place, we'll go there, we just want to talk. How come you don't want to use this mind? I have the greatest mind in professional wrestling. And yet you called everybody else to come to AWA, but not me. He's like, Cody, just come and sit with me. That's all I want. And then the ending of the promo is him going, you can trust me. And it just, with that little, not even a wink, just the way he looked at the camera. And it's like, you know what? Guy's almost 70 years old and he still got it.
Oh, yeah. And it's one of the great things about his promos is you have to lean in. You know, other people were all in your face. You had to actually lean in and hear what he had to say. And then, of course, he made famous probably one of the coolest maneuvers of all time. One of the best way you can always tell a great finishing move in wrestling is it can be hit at any time. The Stone Cold Stunner can be hit at any time. You know, there's just certain moves that are like, if you can hit it at any time, it's the perfect one. But he made famous the DDT. Actually, he named the DDT. He was not the originator of it. Jake gives credit to the formation of, or the creation of the DDT to a Mexican wrestler, Black Gordman, who used it back in the 70s. But Jake's the one that made it famous. And you will see many wrestlers still using the DDT to this day. And I think even DDP, you know, eventually, you know, used a modification of that. You know, there's a lot of versions of it out there. So, but again, that's why I think he belongs up there, because he just, his impact in wrestling and his continued impact. I understand we're looking at WWE right now, and I know he's going to win AEW, but I'm just talking, if you just focus his time frame in WWE and the things that he did, who he helped make, who he wrestled. I mean, you think back into the Macho Man and Elizabeth Wedding. You think of his runs and his feuds with Undertaker. He was the one that was there for Austin for the, you know, the original, yeah, you know, 316 speaks. That's who Austin was talking to. So, I mean, he has been there. He has done it. He has touched and helped so many people. And there, when he wasn't even with WWE, he would still be calling and say, "Hey, man, we need a good finisher. How do we end this storyline?" And he just has the mind for it. So, again, my pick.
And what, and like you said, a great pick. I wish I thought of it. Damn. But I got some wrestlers that are pretty good too. But like you said, you got a mind like that. You got to keep using it. I'm glad he's doing well. That's the biggest thing. You know, after seeing that documentary, where I almost bawled my eyes out. He's doing great now.
Don't be lying. You bawled your eyes out.
I did bawl my eyes out. I ain't gonna lie. But like you said, he's innovative. And he's one of those guys that, if, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think he won a major singles championship in the WWE, yet he was so over. He was one of those guys that didn't need the title to get over. He was over by himself.
No, WWE, he never won.
He never won a world, never won an Intercontinental.
He got it. I think he got a belt with WCW, but I don't think he ever won one.
Yeah,
and he was, of course, inducted to Hall of Fame, you know, WWE Hall of Fame, April 5th, you know, 2014, so 6 years ago.
Well deserved, Jake, and great pick. Great pick, Anthony.
All right, sir. Well, yours would be next.
Yes. Bow your head in silence. You know, every time you hear that gong, it's just like you feel,
you know what it is.
You know what it is. Everybody, even my friends that I work, because sometimes I'll put on my Spotify playlist of WWE, and everybody will just stop. And they know what that gong is. That gong has been around for almost 25 years now. There's been some alterations to his intro music.
Oh, that's not the song you put on it's time for Kane to go to the bathroom, take a shit?
That's a different one.
That's a different one.
There's a different song for that. It's not, we can't
hear
that.
That's the Coco Beware theme song.
That's the Flash Funk one. Flash Funky! But Undertaker, of course, we all knew him as Mean Mark back in WCW. Mean Mark Calloway.
Mean Mark Calloway, yes, sir. That was Mark Calloway. And actually, the only reason I'm going to help you out on this, because he is my next one as well. We both. This is the one that we have in common. And to be honest, if you're a wrestling fan of any sort, Taker has to be on your
list. I think Taker, whatever Rushmore you build, doesn't matter where you put him, what position, he could be in the middle, he could be the first, he could be the last, but he has to be on here. And he had to be on my list. I mean, what can you say about the guy that hasn't been already said? The undefeated streak at WrestleMania, the Tombstone Pile Driver. Like, I didn't know anything about the Tombstone Pile Driver until he started doing it. The casket matches, like the weird supernatural entrances, like, and he made it so believable. That's the thing. Like, his gimmick, as it stands, could be looked at as really stupid. Really stupid. I think
he is the last one standing from the gimmick age, from the occupational of WWE, because you had the plumber, you had the dentist, you had the job. You know, you were the goon, or you were this. He was the Undertaker.
Don't make
he
fun
was the
of
last.
Him. I like that.
I'm just telling you. But I mean, he came in 1990, so you got to think how long he's been there with the company. That was in the middle of the gimmick age, the cartoony age. Of WWE. Yeah.
Knuckleball Schwartz.
Yeah, I mean, you look, you know, even poor Kane, you know, was strapped with, you know, Isaac Yankum. So this was the bad time for bad gimmicks, and this could have been bad for him. And I will say, this is also one thing that he has. Not only has he been there the longest, he's held on to the same gimmick from the beginning. Yeah, he never flip-flopped. It was always The Undertaker.
I mean, he's altered here or there, but it's always been the same at its core.
Like, but that's, again, that's what makes him one of the better ones.
Exactly, because nobody else could adapt. He redefines
himself into something different. You know, Jericho is probably the king of doing that, but Taker has changed very slightly. The biggest one was the American Badass.
That was like the biggest departure, but he was still the Undertaker. Like, I remember he cut a promo in a ring on the SmackDown, and maybe you might remember it, maybe you don't. But he was talking to somebody, and then the guy was like, "Well, you know what? At least you don't dress like Satan no more." And the Undertaker responded, "He's like, I may not be down with the devil anymore, but you know what? I'll still kick your ass."
Not only with Taker's promos, but he is the locker room leader. If anybody doesn't know what they mean by locker room leader, he is the big dog in the locker room. Everybody comes to him. Everybody checks in with him about certain things. He's the one that keeps the boys in line. If you know the term for the wrestlers are the guys in the back, the boys, he's the one that keeps them in line. They talk about, I've heard rumor, you know, the stories of the wrestling court where he is judge. You know, if somebody does something wrong, he's the one that listens to the stories, and he decides what's the best way to fix it.
And everybody knows it too. Like, no matter how over you are, everybody knows that the Undertaker's in charge of that locker room.
And he's deserved it. The things he's done, the time he's spent in the company, the simple fact, and I thought this is hysterical. There's some stuff I've read or about him, but when he was with WCW, WCW literally looked at him and said, "And nobody will pay to watch you wrestle." And yet here, you know, you're watching him wrestle and not only wrestle, but win at WrestleMania. I mean, him winning at WrestleMania was right there next to taxes and death. All right. Undertaker will be at WrestleMania and he will win.
And the thing about this too, it's not throwaway matches. Every WrestleMania, with the exception of the last couple, I would have to say, before like the streak ended, his matches were always match of the year quantity. Mm-hmm. Always. Yep. Every year. Like, you could talk about the matches with Triple H. The Shawn Michaels matches, both of them are legendary. The Batista ones were okay. I mean, the one with the Giant Gonzalez, you know, we won't talk about that one, but the other ones were great.
It is for what
the
it
one
was.
The one with CM Punk was great too, yeah.
I mean, with him, he's held 17 championships, and that's over the WWE, WWF time frame, USWA when he was just coming up, the WCWA when he was coming up in Texas. And then, I mean, if anything, if you look at everything he's done, 21 and 2 now, or one now, what's the record? I know it's 21.
So it's 22. Is it 22 and 2?
Yeah, I think that's what it is. Okay. But you put that in, but then you also put the matches he had with his brother, you know, the birth of Kane coming in and that massive feud, and then the formation of the Brothers of Destruction.
With Kane. I mean, Kane, when he goes to the Hall of Fame, he could directly thank Mark Calloway for that, because yet another gimmicky thing, Kane. Oh, brother, it's not going to work. You talk about another character. I mean, he won't be on Mount Rushmore. I think he's a little bit of that mid-tier, you know, but definitely, if somebody said, "Hey, I want to put Kane on Mount Rushmore," I would listen.
Yeah.
I definitely would listen, because has he had the career of Undertaker? No, but he's another guy that's just been there, and like, his gimmick has evolved. I mean, not to the point of Taker's, but it's still there. Like, he removed the mask, put the mask back on. He even made fun of himself sometimes. You know, they're very versatile, and guys like that you don't find anymore. And Taker's just one of those guys, is just basically say, "Hey, you know what? Open the, you know, what do you want to say about me? What do you want to know?" I mean, here, everything is right there on the table, and everybody knows who the Undertaker is. And what I find fascinating too is every WrestleMania season, you know, he's still wrestling, you know, hopefully he'll stop one day, but he's still in great shape. What I find fascinating is, like, he'll pick his opponent. The opponent doesn't pick him, he'll pick the opponent. And apparently, from what I've read and I've seen, it's a couple of YouTube videos, they go over the match like 3 or 4 months before the event is even started. And that's how meticulous about a match Taker is. He'll sit there, like, he'll call the spots here, you know, "Hey, you do this. Oh, I think this will work." And, you know, he'll give his input, but he'll let the other guy have the input too. And I think that's what you call a general. I'm like, wow, okay. That's, you know, well deserved. So,
yep. So he is the second most prolific pay-per-view performer in WWE history, wrestling 172 matches.
Wow.
And so
that's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, that is a lot. If anybody really wants to get to know more of Taker, check out WWE Network right now. With everything going on, with us being quarantined and stuff, they have actually opened up their membership for free for certain things. You're not going to be getting the current pay-per-views, but you'll be able to watch some of their, you know, some of their stuff. The latest one they have out, you know, the Ruthless Aggression Era. They have documentaries on the Attitude Era. They have a bunch of stuff, but they also have this Stone Cold Steve Austin sessions. And there is about a 2 hour, 2.5 hour interview between him and Undertaker as Mark. You will never find an interview with Taker on camera. You'll hear his voice. This is him and Stone Cold sitting down in a studio asking questions, and you're going to see them talk about it live. And I've listened to it on my phone. I haven't got a chance to sit down and watch it, but the questions and things that I heard on there, I want to rewatch. I want to actually watch it. I know the answers. I've already heard them all, but I want to watch because you never get a chance to see Taker do interviews because he has maintained that mystique. This whole time, you know, he walked out. I'm not talking to you about the business, anything.
Yeah, but later in the years, I'm just glad to see that the walls are breaking down. You could see Mark in an interview, and I saw a little bit of that podcast with Austin. It's fascinating. I listened to the whole thing,
man. It's amazing how they break down where they were at the same time as each other, things they did together. It's amazing to listen to. And you know, and another reason that he's kind of a general in there, he talks about it is, you know, there for a while, Vince, you know, was like, hey, once you're off, you get cleaned up, you shower, and you get done, you dress up in suits. And he turned to Taker and Austin were the two that he's like, no, you guys can stick to your jeans and whatever, just wear black. And Taker's like, nah, that ain't cool. No, they got to do it. I got to do it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I didn't know that. There's like I said, you got to watch the whole thing. There's some really cool stuff in there.
Most definitely. I will.
Right. Well, since it was a combo, I guess I'll go ahead and do mine.
Yeah, do yours.
And mine is, if anybody grew up in the 80s, is Hulk Hogan. Hogan just... Before him, there was only one other major wrestler, and you know, that's Bruno Sammartino.
But even he wasn't... Like
yes, he was. Oh no. Bruno was for the time. Yeah, no, for the time frame. Okay. Yeah, you got to realize for the time, there wasn't that much news coverage. Hogan rode the wave of the rock and wrestling. You know, the birth of MTV. And then you look at the opponents, the colorful opponents that he had. You look at, you know, the Savages, the Ultimate Warriors, the Rowdy Pipers. You look at the time frame, I think, is what it is. Bruno was Hogan before that, and Bruno held the title for a very long time. Bruno is in my runners up for you know who should be up there. You know, if I can't pick these guys, Bruno would be the next one. But Hogan just was amazing. Came from the AWA, that was the Laverne Gagne, Minnesota area. And if nobody knows about that area, please do yourself a favor. WWE Network has a bunch of those matches from that time frame. Everybody that turned up in WWE during the 80s, during the rock and wrestling era, came from
started there.
Yeah, all came from Gagne, man. Literally started there. But to me, Hogan was one of the first national names. Bruno was Northeastern. Bruno was known in the West Coast, but you want national person. Everybody knew him. My mother knew who Hogan was. My dad, who's not into the wrestling at all, he knew who Hulk Hogan was. So I put him up there for what he did and how he reached everybody. Yes, it was cheesy. Again, it was the 80s, the colorfulness that we had, say your prayers and take your vitamins. But that's something that we all grew up on as children of my age, you know, that's why I feel he was the perfect one. He really was the headliner for the first 9 WrestleManias. It was him or somebody else, him and a tag team partner. Anything in the 90s or the 80s that you can think of, any great matches, usually Hogan was part of. The Andre the Giant moments, I think the one that sticks out in my head the most, and I can't remember which one this was the was him and Undertaker, him and Ultimate Warrior, sorry, where they, you know, it was the Intercontinental against the...
Oh, that was WrestleMania 7. The Ultimate Challenge. Yeah, I remember that. Just, yeah.
You know, you look at him and Savage's relationship, and it just, he touched everybody and was influenced everything. So I think that's why I put him in there.
Everything what Hogan did was always big. That's the one thing I remember. It was always big. Whenever he came out, you knew it was him. That song, you know, that intro, the ripping of the shirt. Like, he would get everybody involved. Yeah, his move sets were not the greatest. That's why I didn't really put him up there. But doesn't mean he doesn't deserve to be up here. I mean,
yeah. To me, it's I'm not talking technical. We can do a technical Mount Rushmore because none of these guys would really show up on there. This is just who of the company I think meant something or was a major part of it. Yeah, if we want to go technical, yeah, that's a whole nother list.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm not downgrading him. He couldn't do much. I mean, he's a big dude, but I'm just saying, like, for what he did, I mean, he always would get everybody involved. I mean, he could put a heel over later on like he did. I mean, he held the WWF Championship for a while. When he lost it, it was a big thing, but it ushered in another era. And then don't even get me started. I mean, when he went to WCW, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, what he did there.
Weeks, but he just transcended everything. Like you said, he transcended. He helped build WrestleMania to what it is today.
And don't think when Kane says he didn't, his moveset was really small. Hogan will say that. I've seen interviews where Hogan jokingly says, I have three matches. Literally, he has three matches that he does over and over again.
Yeah, basically.
And, you know, and when you look at his finishing move, it's the leg drop. I'm going to drop my leg on you. It's almost up there as bad as the people's elbow. I mean, I love The Rock to death. I thought he was the most electrifying man in sports entertainment, but the people's elbow?
Yeah.
Was right now. Yeah. I mean, it's just
like the five knuckle shuffle. It's just,
yeah. Yeah. It's again, it's, you know, even I think the five knuckle shuffle would hurt a little bit more than all of those to get combined, but still, it was one of those. It wasn't about the moves. It was about the connection, the connection he had with the fans and the fans had with him. I'm sure he didn't originate it, but he will always be known for being put in a bad position and the fans cheering him on, and he comes back and he fights and he comes back. His hands, his head's, yeah, he just, I mean, it's cheesy as hell today, but when you watch it back and you think of the time and in the place that these things happen, they're amazing. You'll still get goosebumps watching
it. Of course. Anytime you watch a Hogan match, you always get, especially the WrestleMania 3 match with the Giant. That's, you talk about electricity. I remember watching that on pay-per-view and just seeing, like, and it was held in a football stadium. That was one of the first times they had ever done a WrestleMania in an actual football stadium. And just seeing, like, these two gladiators go at it, and it's like 70,000 people. It's just, I got chills just thinking about that match now. Like, wow. Yeah. I mean, you talk about a match that, I mean, Hulkamania was already over, but that was the match that just sent him into the stratosphere, because basically that's an older Andre the Giant. He'd never lost, and he put his friend over, and that was it. He's like, hey, I'm at the end of my run, but I'm going to make sure, like, what limited moves we can do that you're going to get over. You're going to slam me, and everybody's going to go insane. And that slam is an iconic moment. No, every, you see that, you're like, wow, he actually did it. There was no cranes or wires. I know there was like a rumor there was some wires. I'm like, well, how are they going to hang wires for him to lift Andre to die? That was actually him lifting it.
And that's a good sign of a good wrestler is I'm leaving. I'm going to give you a Greek going away, you know?
Yeah.
I'm going away. You're going to look like $1 million. Because that way, if I ever do come back, you're going to make me look like $1 million.
Exactly.
When it's all about give and take with them. So yeah, definitely. That he is my second to last choice. I have one more, and, but we'll go ahead with yours. You ready for yours?
Yes, sir. Cue it up. That's right. Asylites. It is the Macho Man, Randy Savage. From Tampa, Florida, I believe, or Pensacola, Florida. I'm not too sure. I think he was another one that started out in the Indies. I don't think he started with Vernon, though. I think he was more in the Florida Championship Wrestling, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong about that. But yes, Randy Macho Man Savage, one of the top tier guys to me. And to me, he was one of the last guys that, if you are a big sweaty, like a WWF fan like I am and the captain is, he had that build. And I think Grant Gimmick, who was on with us a couple months ago, he talked about the build. And the build, what I'm talking about is you start from one area and then you get built to the world. You basically have the hero story. was Randy Savage. And I think that's what he had. Like, he was built up as a heel when he started off. He basically, you know, the biggest thing, he beat Tito Santana for the Intercontinental Championship, cheated. And after that, he held on to the belt for almost a year. Had the one of the greatest feuds of all time with Ricky Steamboat. You talk about a build to that match and the hype. That was also on WrestleMania 3 with Andre the Giant and Hulk Hogan. And that match outshined the Hogan match, which is, how can that happen? Savage in the ring was amazing. Amazing. One of the best wrestlers that can move, you know, vertically, laterally. If you watch that Steamboat match, it's a clinic. A clinic. And I think it only lasted 15 to 20 minutes, but it's a wrestling clinic. Personality-wise, come on. I mean, snap into a Slim Jim. His interviews were always, and then he would just go off on these weird little tangents. Great at promos. And then the moment, of course, he had Miss Elizabeth by him, which eventually became his wife. The build, of course, the tournament that happened in Atlantic City where he won the WWF Championship for the first time with the Mega Powers. Then the year later, the Mega Powers exploding. I mean, Savage was there, man. And then he, you know, his career late in WCW wasn't the greatest, but people don't talk about when he actually stepped away from the ring for a while. He's actually on commentary with Jerry Lawler, which I thought he was pretty colorful on there as well. So the Macho Man, sir, is on my Mount Rushmore. He is number three.
Definitely.
What do you think?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. You talk about not only he's one of those second generation wrestlers, you know, people forget about his dad, you know, Angelo Poffo. No, Angelo Poffo. Then you throw in Lanny Poffo, his brother. So, I mean, you have a great family, great lineage. You throw in that he was also an amazing baseball player. He signed with the St. Louis Cardinals before he had to move over to wrestling. So, I mean, he's definitely a great, great person. If you want to talk about the flamboyant, over the top, not sure, you know, he is the exact opposite of Jake the Snake, but they are both amazing wrestlers and what they do. You know, he was the over the top flamboyant. I'm going to yell, you know, what are you trying to say?
Yeah. I mean, in interviews, sometimes you couldn't understand a word he was saying, but it was still cool. And he was still cool. He came out with that robe and it was flashy. But when he got in the ring, man, he was all business. Yeah, he was wearing pink tights, but he would kick your ass.
Yeah. Then you would forget about, you know, his connection with Miss Elizabeth. I mean, Miss Elizabeth was the queen of wrestling. Nobody touched Miss Elizabeth. And she and him together were amazing. Then you throw in his time with Sensational Sherry.
Yeah, another underrated time where he was King Macho,
I believe. Yeah, and it's just, I mean, he is... His intro of pomp and circumstance was properly given to him because of just how he comes out. And he just became an icon. Anybody, anywhere you do. Oh yeah. Anybody knows what that is.
And the elbow drop. Yep. Do you know that some days, like even today, some wrestlers, they go to the top row and they call it, what did they call it? The Macho Man elbow, because that's what he made famous, man. It's just like, he goes up to the perch, his two arms stretched out underneath his head, and then he does the elbow. I mean, not too many people do it like him, but that's, you know, another wrestler, which I'll name later on, and was heavily influenced by Randy Macho Man Savage. But, you know, having him up there, like I said, the feuds, is just overall body of work. I mean, you cannot argue of the late, great Randy Macho Man Savage.
And don't forget, don't ever forget the WrestleMania album for the Speaking from the Heart, where he rapped.
I didn't think you were going to bring up that Macho Man rap album, because the reason why at work I play that rap album a lot and the looks on people's faces, like, who is this? That's Randy Savage's rap album.
Exactly.
You never heard it? You know how he missed he made a song about Mr. Perfect, or, you know, your sellout Hogan. I mean, come on, that's classics.
So yeah, I mean, he is an icon. And he does, you know, he does deserve a spot up there, glasses and all.
Oh yeah. Randy Macho Man Savage. What you got, sir?
Oh, my last one, and who I feel completely deserves it.
Son of a bitch.
That's right, folks. The Rattlesnake, Stone Cold Steve Austin. If you're a fan of any type of wrestling starting in the Attitude Era, it starts with him. And if you listen back to this podcast right now, You will hear his name pop up several times because of that's how influential he was. Coming into WWE as the what was his name?
Wasn't the Ringmaster?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, thank you. The Ringmaster. Yeah, it was so bad. Where he didn't talk. They didn't want him to talk, so Vince straps him with the Million Dollar Man and holds on to the Million Dollar Belt, a, you know, de facto belt, means nothing. But, and then slowly but surely he gets rebranded to Stone Cold Steve Austin, the Rattlesnake. And one of the best feuds anywhere started with him and Vince McMahon. Argue with me. Make me change my mind about that being the best feud of all times. And when it comes to wrestling, it connected with everybody in every age group, cultural group.
Because it was a simple formula. It was like basically you're the employee and you hate your boss. So basically when he's beating up his boss, that's us. Like we are Stone Cold. We're taking out aggression on our boss, who's a freaking dick. And that's awesome. Yeah, get him, Austin. Beat him up. That was everybody. That feud carried empathy for lots and lots of people out there. So I to say that's not the best feud of all time, you know, talk to me too. I'll back you up.
I mean, there are some great feuds. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to take anything away from the the Dusty Rhodes, the Ric Flairs, the, you know, the Ricky the Dragon. See, I'm not none of those, but when you really boil it down to the core of a great feud and something that captured the audience and captured the world, it's got to be that feud between him and McMahon. And then, again, he was the poster boy and of the Attitude Era. When he finally left the company, you know, your premature retirement because of some injuries, that was really the ending of the Attitude Era.
Built it up and got it to the point, and then sadly injuries took him away from us. And then, but every time you hear that glass shatter, you know who's coming out. Even now, you know, he's made a great transition into the podcast world.
Yeah, he's actually probably, I mean, he's been, I don't know how long his podcast has been running. It's been running almost 8-9 years. He's been a long time podcaster, and it fits his personality and
what
he's talking about. And but just his time again within WWE, you look at who did he, you know, wrestle? Who did he fight? Bret Hart, we already talked about. Jake the Snake Roberts, we already talked about. The Rock, we've sort of talked about. He wasn't on the list, but The Rock, you know, the most electrifying man in sports entertainment, who's now probably one of the biggest selling movie stars of all time. You know, that was a match made in heaven. And then you just look at just the relationship he had with everybody else. I understand from the stories that have been told, Austin was very much kept to himself. That, you know, DTA, don't trust anyone. Lifestyle he had as a character was truly his character, his personality, because he had trouble trusting people within the business. And he'll tell you too that some of his problems in the wrestling industry were really stemmed from him and his personality. You know, him leaving WCW was basically, you know, tell him I'm not here. Same thing with WWE. What was it,
the FedEx that he got through the mail from?
Well, he was already been sort of been told he was fired, but he still got a FedEx through the mail. Yeah. But at the same time, people called him and said, hey, you know, I need to talk to Steve. And you could hear him in the background. Tell them sons of bitches I ain't here. So that's him. He will so, you know, completely admit to, you know, it's his mentality and how he's brought up, but it was something that was that lightning in a bottle. You'll never capture again. Hogan, you'll never capture again. Austin, you'll never capture again.
No. And it's a simple premise too.
Yeah.
And it's crazy because, you know, to think that so many smart marks and promoters out there had never thought, why not do just like this anti-hero character? And he was really the first one because, yes, he was a heel, but, you know, the moment happened with Brett. And then after that, he was still sort of a tweener. And then they had that tweener role. He was one of the first ones to be that tweener. Like,
yeah.
Oh, he could be the good or bad guy. He was a good guy who got cheered, but he would do bad guy things. I mean, that's basically it.
Yeah. He was the antithesis of the anti-hero. And I will be honest with this. I've mentioned this before when talking about wrestling. I believe him and the NWO is what killed traditional wrestling. Yes. I love what they did. Loved it completely, but they killed the bad guy, good guy, black and white, you know, feud. Now there was this gray, and there became too much gray. So I think
nowadays there's way too much gray. That's the problem. Like that, you're right. That formula killed off a lot of things. I mean, it was great for what it is, and I think if you do it right, it's fantastic. But if everybody's doing it, it becomes like.
And he wouldn't have been anything. I mean, I think he would have done amazing. I just don't think he would have done it as well without that villain of Mr. McMahon.
You need a McMahon. Everybody needs their Joker, and he definitely had it. So,
yep. All right. So that is my final one. So what do we got one more for you?
Yeah, got one more. Yep, that's right. The man himself, the voice to the voiceless, Mr. CM Punk. Guy basically started out in Ring of Honor, had blonde hair and all that, and basically he was what Triple H called him. He was a little internet darling. But the one thing that always struck me about Punk was not the biggest guy, not the most muscular guy, but damn, those promos. Those promos. I think if Jake the Snake Roberts and Randy Macho Man Savage had a kid, it'll be CM Punk. I think he has, basically has the moves of Savage and the promo skills of a Jake Roberts, but it's in a different level. To me, he was one of those guys, when he first came to WWF, I could see something there, but when he let loose that pipe bomb, it broke down the walls. It opened the floodgates to this character that, yes, he's still relatively young to be on a Mount Rushmore to me, but he opened up a new era. And sadly, I don't think he was treated like a superstar because, you know, Cena was still there at the time and all that. But you talk about a guy that could literally do anything, literally have you in the palm of your hands. Literally, all you got to do is listen to the guy talk and you'd be entranced. Like, wow. And it could be with anybody. When he was doing his cult thing for a while, that thing couldn't work. Straight Edge Society, but he made that work. And then he became, you know, the CM Punk that we all know and love today. You know, sadly, he had a bad leaving with the WWF, but look at him now. He's not wrestling. He's not wrestling. He goes to Fox once a month. And every arena, when we had arenas, what did they always sing? CM Punk.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They still say he's been gone for almost, what, 6 years from the company?
Well, same thing with Austin. And his what?
Yeah. What? That exactly. That's another thing. It just keeps going on. And he's just one of those special guys that, you know, like his in-ring work, great. I love all his moves. But that voice, man. He could get anything over. He could sell ice to an Eskimo. That's how good he was.
I love the simple fact of his career right now is, and anybody would love this. This is Austin would love this. I don't have to work for you anymore, but I can show up a job and make fun of you and tell you what you're doing wrong. That's his job right now. When you really
nothing they can do.
Yeah, and there's not they can't because they have a contract with this company, who hired him. So all he does is show up once a month and go, I think you guys are being stupid and you're doing something wrong. And it's like great to show up at your old job and sit down in the lobby and make fun of your boss. Who wouldn't want to do that?
I wonder if deep down Fox hiring did this for a reason. I keep wondering, I know he's great, he's very knowledgeable, but I'm thinking like deep-seated thoughts like, are they trying to like do, because you know that's got to piss the McMahons off.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I'm sure in some way they aren't doing it to piss McMahon's off, but they're doing it to draw ratings, because guess what, you would have never watched the Fox show unless he was on there.
No, and when I heard he came on, I heard that music, what, he's gonna be on there once a month? Okay, that's the one time I watch that.
You're gonna watch in getting ratings based off of that, because people want to hear what does a former employee want to say about their boss. You know, this, you were talking about something extremely divisive, it's that. And I think it's a smart thing. Whoever decided to book him and get him under contract for Fox, smart man.
Yeah, give him all the monies, as they say. But he's had great feuds. The match against John Cena at the Money in the Bank pay per view, where he won the WWF title and supposedly was leaving the company and leaves to the stands. That was a great moment because people didn't know, was he really leaving? Because that angle was built up. Oh, my contract is up and I'm leaving. I'm going to New Japan. Is he going to take the WWF title with him? I felt that angle could have been drawn out a little bit longer. I think they rushed it just a tad. You know, I was reading something that the original part of that angle was going to be he wins the title and leaves. Then he doesn't come back till SummerSlam, literally 3 or 4 months later. and he is the WWF champion. Then he fights Cena, but you know, the WWF, you know, they rushed it a little bit. You know, I don't know why. Just, you know, when they rush things, they always ruin it. But yeah, just that match itself. I mean, you know, I talk about Andre the Giant and Hogan in that match and the electricity. Watch the Cena Punk match. I think 2011 Money in the Bank. You could feel, and I think Michael Cole, who was not a great announcer to me, but he said something very poignant. He's like, you could feel the tension, and it was in Chicago. You could just feel it when Punk came out. Like, is he, like, they didn't, nobody knew. Is he really leaving? That was one of those things that was kept, you know, like you've always said, you like the element of surprise of not knowing. That was one of those times nobody knew what was going to happen.
And I think Cole does a good job for his time, but you have to realize you were raised and brought up on filet mignon, all right? And you're not getting filet mignon anymore. You're getting a little bit lower grade of beef. It's still good beef. We were raised in, you know, up on you know, Lawler and good old JR. That's filet mignon for us. Cole does his job. I think he does a decent job, you know, for the position he was put in.
He's okay.
Again, it's what were we raised
on. I know, but I think
we always think what we were raised upon.
There are some things that I'll talk to you about it some other time. Why I don't like him, but yeah, but that match itself, overall, he had one of the longest reigning WWE championships ever, even though he had that stupid spinner belt. He lost to The Rock, and one of the big things that bothers me about Punk's run is they never saw him as a number one guy. Even though he was a champion, he was not main eventing like shows, which is crazy to think. You still had Cena there. You had a part-time Rock there. Even the match where he lost to The Rock for the championship, he thought, hey, you know, it's going to be me, Cena, and Rock at WrestleMania, three for the WWF title. That didn't happen, even though he put on a great match with The Undertaker. To me, the opportunities that, you know, I guess Vince or Triple H or whoever it may be, even though to me he's on Mount Rushmore, it's funny that Vince and the rest of the guys never saw him as a number one guy. That always kind of baffled me. Maybe because they didn't make him. I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of innuendo and stories out there.
They saw him. They had to see him as a number one guy. They put
I don't know. Like, if you look, they did put the belt on him. But if you look at the match cards, the way it went down in pay-per-views, he barely main evented anything. Like, it was always –
Just because you're the main guy doesn't mean you have to main event. That's something – they put the strap on him. That means that they're rooting for him, that they believe him to be the number one guy. You don't put the belt on somebody you think is okay to be the number one guy. No, you put it on the number one guy. Yeah, that argument's always had issues with me. So that one I don't, you know, I truly don't believe. No, he is not the longest reigning, by the way.
Well, he was one of the – I didn't say the long – he was like one of the longest reigning. If I said he was the longest, I was mistaken. But no, he was one of the longest reigning ones. I think it was like 300 some days. But he held it for a while, especially in this modern era where titles change hands with, you know, the drop of a finger.
Right now Brock Lesnar holds it at 435.
Yeah, but Brock, come on,
doesn't matter. He still holds it, and before that is Bruno Sammartino. So,
what is Bruno, like 1,000 something?
2,803 days.
So he held the belt
8 months.
7 years, yeah. What about Luthez? Didn't Luthez hold on to it for like 20 years?
No, that wasn't the WWE belt.
Oh, okay. Was it the NWA?
I believe so.
Okay, I have to look that up. They said that Luthez held the championship.
What you like really look years. At? I mean, I think Mae Young holds like the longest title win, like 10 years or something.
Oh, God. Yeah, she was like, I think she was women's champion when I was born.
Yeah.
That was, and then she still was, like, when I was in high school. I'm like, my God, she's still wrestling?
Yeah, with, like, but, Bruno, they try to get it off of him, but nobody was worthy enough. So he finds, like, guys, find somebody, please. I'm done. I want to retire now.
He was trying. But, yeah, Bruno's another good one. But Punk being up there for me is a no-doubter. You know, sad that he had retired a little bit early, but, you know, you never know. He's still young. Maybe one day.
So what do you have for runner-up?
I got one runner-up. Okay. Actually, no, I got two. I got Ricky the Dragon Steamboat.
Nice. Yeah.
Ricky the Dragon, I mean, I mentioned him a couple times before I even said he was a runner-up, and I think you knew he was going to be a runner-up. I love this guy. Anytime I watch a match, I mean, I was talking about the Savage match. Watch the Ric Flair match from Fall Brawl.
Oh, yeah.
That match and the rematch they had in Chicago.
Well, there were that was a three. There were three matches for that.
Was it three? Okay. Mm-hmm. But the first one was really good when he won the title. There's a second one, I think, that was ended in time limit draw. The third one, Flair won it back.
Yeah.
All three of those matches, I mean, yeah, they're pretty much the same, but it's just like the movement they go through. Just, and he was so smooth in the ring. Everybody says it now. Like, just the guy could do no wrong. And he was not a big guy, again, but his moves in the ring were very fluid, and he could work with anybody.
Yes, he could, definitely. So who do you have for your next one?
Oh, my next one after that is The Rock.
The Rock. Okay. You and I have the same. Rock also falls under my list for runner-up as well.
Yeah. And I mean, what can we say about The Rock that hasn't been already said? I mean, it's pretty obvious. You could put him on Mount Rushmore. I wouldn't have an argument with it. But to me, maybe I'm just oversaturated with The Rock. Maybe that's why I didn't put him on Mount Rushmore. But if you put him up there, I'm not going to hate it. But, you know, The Rock is The Rock. He's the most electrifying man in all sports entertainment.
Yeah, I believe with Rock, you got to think, you know, where Rocky came from and everything that was in his way. Nobody remembers when he came out. The crowd used to chant, "Die, Rocky, die." And everybody, I was recently watching
the Ruthless Aggression.
I was been watching that documentary, and it's funny. People are like, they're like, "Oh, people were booing Cena. We didn't know what to do with that. That's never happened before." I go, "Yeah, it has." You go back to The Rock's career. You can see that what you did there. Do that again, and you'll fix it. But I mean, they eventually did, but. Yeah, I mean, his ring work, again, we've talked, you know, not amazing. He's got a few set moves. But the mic skill, you know, if you're going to do a Mount Rushmore of mic skills on top, you know, right there in the George Washington, you know, little area of there. But, yeah, definitely him. For me, also CM Punk is on my runner-up as well, just so you know. I know I was kind of like a little bashing on him, but no, he is.
No, it's okay.
He is in my runners-up because I think – he was the representation of the independent wrestler that we never got to see. You know, now we're seeing those independent guys. We're seeing Daniel Bryan. We're seeing AJ Styles. We're seeing those guys that used to be the Ring of Honor in the independent circuit.
So Samoa Joe's. Yeah. They're all in there.
Yeah. CM Punk was the first one. He was the first man on the moon, so to speak, when it came to independent, hardcore independent guys like that. So that's what, you know, one reason why I put him up there. And then my third one, I've mentioned him probably a dozen times already, but Bruno, just for the simple fact of who he was, the age he held the title through the 70s. You know, he was the face of the WWE, and, you know, for the most part. And he was around when Junior, you know, Vincent came around to pick up that. So, I mean, yeah, he's definitely a major one for that. So those are my runner-ups as well.
Yeah, he definitely transitioned the company into, I guess it was San Martino, then after Bruno was, I believe, Billy Graham.
No, San Martino lost it to Zabisco.
Okay, and then Zabisco lost it to the Billy Graham, and then Billy Graham lost it to Backlund?
I believe Backlund had it, yeah.
And then Backlund, and then the Sheik. And then Hulk Hogan, and that's I do remember that because
yeah, there was a few journeys between Bruno and Hogan, but yeah, no, yeah, there was a Larry Zbyszko who he dropped the belt to,
yeah, his protege, but yeah, so I guess that's it.
All right, guys, well, that is it for our Mount Rushmore of wrestling for WWE. All right, guys, well, if you guys did not like our list, which I'm sure there's a bunch of you out there that did not like our list. That's
completely. Oh boy, they're barking at my window right now.
Yeah, go to our Facebook page, go to our Twitter page, talk to us about it. Tell us what you guys think would be your top four guys. That's the Mount Rushmore, four faces. Tell us who do you think. You know, do you agree with our list? Disagree? What do you think? Just tell us. You know, and we'll. I'm sure you guys are going to come up with some good ones that we'll be like, you know, that would be pretty good. Cause I had a second runner up list that was just as whacked out as, you know, this one. So,
oh, you, I haven't even told you about my second runner up list. Yeah, we'll freak out.
Okay, maybe we'll post those on Facebook this week after we dropped this episode. So maybe you guys can see who our, you know, other ones were. So maybe we might've had the same ones a little bit.
I might've,
but go ahead guys. Make sure you guys check that out on our Facebook page. But make sure you can catch everything on heroesasylum.com. This issue, all of our archives, easy for me to say. Also, Midnight Movies, which we're dropping a new one here. Zack Snyder, you copied us. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Zach, for copying us, man. Appreciate that.
But we're going to we finally sat down and did Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice. That will be coming out this week. And also our midnight movie for Thor was released last week. So, and then let us know about your social media ones there, Jeff.
Okay, sir. We are at the Heroes Asylum podcast on Twitter. That is hashtag Heroes Asylum, no E in that. Also on Facebook, which is our main area of contact with the Heroes Asylum. Not only that, the Heroes Asylum podcast page, main area of contact. We got some good stuff coming up. And of course, this week we're doing our main things. What we're going to do, what they say Monday. What did they say Monday? I actually picked out a picture already, sent it to the captain. I think you all like it very much. Tuesday Titan, I picked a weirdo Titan. You guys will love it too. Releases of the week. Guys, get those releases of the week. Head to your comic book shops, local shops. We don't know how much longer they're going to be open. We don't know how much longer they're going to keep distributing. So please head out there when you can and get out there. Throwback Thursday. Always have a good Throwback Thursday. Captain always has some good stuff. Friday Night Fights. Last week we had Nightwing versus Deathstroke. This week we're going to go a little bit differently, maybe a little cosmic-y. And Saturday is Saturday Sci-Fi. Sadly, we haven't done anything sci-fi lately, but I'm sure the captain is going to make up for that with some amazing choices over the weeks to come.
That's right. And don't forget, guys, Friday, you can also hear the Friday or Saturday release, depending on how quick they can get to it. The watch along, the TV, Heroes Asylum TV room, where this year or this season, we're breaking down and watching Star Wars Clone Wars Season 7. The last one was Episode 6. For a Deal No Deal. And if anybody's a huge Solo fan from the movie and you like that back, you like that backwater worlds and those behind the scenes level 13 stuff, this season with the Ahsoka storyline just drips with that. So make sure you guys check that out as well.
Please do. And as always, check out the Midnight Movies page. As Jeff said, that's good stuff. Even check out the last Thor one. That was very interesting. I actually started listening to that, and I gotta say, not a lot of Thor was mentioned, but everything else was very interesting. So do check that page out. It is one of my labors of love. And as always, from the captain to me to you, get to the asylum. Yeah.